Welcome to the Everesting Podcast, built by Quarry. In this episode, I'm hosting David Harris from the UK, who is an Everesting aficionado as well as an ultra endurance cyclist. He has done a huge list of accomplishments to his name in the ultra cycling world. Definitely knows what he's talking about, and he's taken on the Everesting Challenge in numerous formats, including the Everesting, a more traditional Everesting, a 10K Everesting, and of course, Rome's, which we've been talking about lots on the show, and we talk about in this episode of the podcast too. So David, thank you so much for making the time to come onto the show and chat. Of course, if anybody hears something or would like to perhaps find a time to come onto the podcast, you can reach out at podcast@everesting.com. That will come right to me. So thank you, David. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you're able to give us a positive rating or review on whatever podcast platform you're finding the show, that helps us find new audience members. And lastly, the podcast is brought to you by the State Bicycle Company, who you can visit at statebicycle.com. They have recently dropped their all-road bike in a carbon frame. So that bike's been available in steel and aluminum. I've ridden them both of those metal versions. They're awesome bikes. Very, very excited to get my hands on the carbon version of the all-road. So check them out at statebicycle.com or give them a follow on social media. That's the best way to find them. On to this episode, and we will be back next week. Thanks.
So you had been well into your endurance cycling career when Everesting took its grip on you, and 2001 is when you started to dabble. I'll use the term dabble with some base camps. It looks like you did to begin with, but you know, that's dabble is a loose term.
It's
a
lot of climbing. So yeah, I took up cycling as a sort of hobby when I was living and working in Norway at the time, quite a remote part of Norway. And I sort of had a mountain bike, but one of the few things you could do in the community where I was living and working was spin class. And you know, and spin class got me into cycling, and then that got me into sort of doing some cycle holidays, and then that kind of got me into doing some events. And then you do a few sort of, let's say, non-competitive multi-day events. I think I did 5 bicycle tours of Colorado when I lived and worked in, awesome, in Houston. And bicycle tour of Colorado was just such a fun event. You know, I considered it to be tough at the time, but it was very relaxed riding, if you know what I mean. It was very informal, and the social aspect at the end of the day was as important as the riding, you know. But then, you know, then other things sort of come onto your radar in terms of what you're doing. And, you know, so in the UK, you know, Lands End John O'Groats, which is sort of end to end, is one I've done, with my best mate who I've done my Everest things with. And you just sort of keep seeing it, and, you know, Song Cold Challenge came on my radar, I guess back in 2009, but I didn't attempt it, my first one, until 2017, and did a couple and didn't get all the way through them. You know, I got to stay 7 on my first 2 before I blew up for various reasons. And I found that really despondent, because you put in so much training for that, you know, and you invest so much time in the event to get deep into it, and then fail was quite miserable. So in 2019, I did a Oak Roof Challenge Alps, which, you know, instead of being, because, you know, Song Cold Challenge is, I guess, comparing it to Everesting, is you're doing a base camp a day for 10 days, pretty much. You know, it's a couple of hundred kilometers, it's 4,000 to 5,000 meters, right? And Oak Roots, you know, I think 7 days, you know, and it's, you know, 150 kilometers, yeah. So I thought that was achievable. I did it, and I thought, okay, yeah, I'm enjoying it, and I thought I'll have one more shot at a Song Cold Challenge, and then the pandemic hit, of course, and the pandemic sort of threw everyone's plans out for what they wanted to do. And I'd heard of Everesting before the pandemic, and I think I was quite dismissive of it as a concept.
I was too.
I can go, you know, spend days riding through different climbs on the Alps, why would I want to spend 24 odd hours just riding up and down the same hill? And that had kind of no appeal. And then in the first lockdown of 2020, my best mate's neighbor, who's also an avid cyclist, went off and did a base camp ride. And he's more of a crit style rider than an endurance guy, you know. And he went off and did the base camp, and we sort of made a pact then that would go back the next summer and make an attempt to do an actual Everesting. So in the April of 21, we went and did the base camp on that hill, which is Firle Beacon down on the south coast of England. Because we just wanted to understand, you know, do we have the right gearing on the bike, you know, and really come up with a strategy. And we rode it like you would ride a very long, typical sort of Sunday ride, in that didn't eat properly, didn't drink properly, and we were all falling apart towards the end of the base camp. But figured that if we had slightly better gearing, and we actually did have a proper nutrition and hydration strategy, that we'd survive it. You know, and so we went back in June. We're really disciplined on the sort of reps we were doing before stopping, eating, drinking, and all three of us got through the Everesting on our first attempt at an Everesting, which was really good. And then I was a physical wreck for about a week after that. Yeah, it was you know, I could barely walk. You know, but you know, it was worth the result at the end, I think. And as soon as you finish, you think, right, never going to do one of these again. I guess that's everyone's immediate reaction. But then we were thinking, like, you know, well, when we got to the end and we really should have gone done a 10K, which is, I think you've mentioned on previous podcasts, everyone's regret on their first Everesting. If they just invested another couple of hours, they probably could have gotten the 10K badge too. So
definitely.
We wanted to go do a 10K repeat, which is what we did in 2022, but we wanted to do it on a hill that hadn't been Everested before. So I'd ridden a hill in Wales that I thought was a pretty good candidate. It was about 1.8K long. I think it's got an average gradient of just under 9%. Doesn't have any hairpins or anything on it. It's absolutely in the middle of nowhere with no mobile phone signal. But we went and did a base camp on that in the April of 22. It was snowing when we started the base camp. But then warmed up a bit and the roads cleared up, and we did the base camp. Figured again that, you know, what our nutrition plan was, figured again that we needed better gearing than we actually had for our previous attempt, because there were some really steep ramps, some 18% ramps at the top of the climb. And then we went back in June and did the Everesting 10K, which went pretty much according to plan. But as you say, when you do these things and you think you plan for everything, you know, and I knew I was going to be riding into the night. I finished at like 2 a.m. and the sun set about 10 o'clock. So we did it around the mid, you know, the summer solstice. What you find is at night, the sheep decide they want to go sleep in the road because the road's heated up during the day.
It's so nice and warm.
Sense. And then suddenly you just got sheep all the way down the road, and they're not very keen on moving. So you're trying to descend, you're trying to sort of get the sheep out of the way, and it was a bit hazardous, but you know, again, it was an experience. Got through it. You know, we did a first Everesting for a hill, which was great. But the day before that, I'd done a sort of warm up 40K ride up Hernant Pass, which was the hill we Everested on. And then went down another valley and up another climb and sort of did this 40K loop. And it kind of occurred to me that it's a 40K loop. It was just under 1,000 meters. And then you think, oh, well, if I just multiply everything by 10, that makes a Rome, you know. So, and there were a few other climbs around the area. And it's just to the south of Stulan Dam, which Chris Hall did the Seven Everesting in 7 days on. So it's basically, you can see that valley from the valley, one of the valleys I was in. So a plan to do an Everesting Rome. There was a really great Airbnb that was on the loop. So you got like a proper base camp with a fridge and an ice machine and all that stuff. Because it was quite hot this summer. It got up to 28 degrees. And so I went and did the Everesting Rome. So and that was awesome.
And that was this year.
And that was this year, yeah. And I because you can psych yourself out when you're planning these Everestings, because it, you know, the concept of 400 kilometers and 10,000 meters is kind of tough to get your head around. And you look at the Hall of Fame and you see people have done 600 kilometer roads, right? And you just think, like, man, you've got to be running so damn quick and you can never stop, right? So I planned something that I knew was achievable, and I just equated it to be two tough days on a Songkhol. And I knew I could do six tough days on a Songkhol before I broke down. Actually, I've managed to do 10 because I managed to complete my third Songkhol challenge. But, it's so psychologically, I found it a lot easier than a regular Everesting. But I'd done it in such a way that it was very controlled, because I had a proper base camp on the loop. I was never really more than an hour away from change of clothes or clothes for the weather conditions, because there were a lot of thunderstorms forecast for that weekend. Managed to control hydration, nutrition, and everything else. So that all kind of went according to plan. But the thing with Rome was, again, it comes back to some of the podcasts you did with Sir Guy Lightspeed on there's Romes and then there's Romes, right? And the purity of the Rome, and can you do a Rome without a repeat? And I definitively planned repeats in my Rome, and I didn't feel it invalidated the attempt, because
not in any way. No.
In the UK, it's going to be virtually impossible to not repeat a climb and do it within the 36 hours. We aren't the Alps, we aren't the Pyrenees. I mean, it's very easy to design an out and back in the Alps and Pyrenees that's going to be, non-repeat. And when I was doing the Sherpa week to raise the money for Jack Thompson last October.
I saw that you also completed that.
I went out to Tenerife, because I had a week of vacation to burn towards the end of the year. So I went out to Tenerife to do that. And my plan was, as part of the week, I was going to ride up all four sides of the island, because there's basically a route up from all four of them, of the cardinal coordinates. And I did that, and while I was out there, I was thinking, like, well, can you turn this into a Rome? And so I just for giggles and not thinking, I'd really ever do it, I sort of planned out up all four sides of what I consider to be an ultra pure Rome, which is no repeat climb on a single mountain. Which you can't even do on something like Von 2 unless you throw a gravel ascent into it, right? So I've done the three sides of Von 2 in a single day, and you barely get less than 6,000 meters doing that, right? So if you take one of the gravel routes up as well, or maybe there's more than one gravel route up, maybe you can get an Everesting out of it. So it's a single mounted route, no repeats. Is that possible? And yes, it is. And I was chatting with my mate, and he goes, well, there's a few issues that Tenerife in December, you probably get maybe 11, 12 hours of sunlight, but you don't get it's not like in I guess where you are, or where I am in summertime, where you get maybe 18 hours of sunlight, right? There's a probability you're going to start to do some of the first climbs or descents at the end of the day in the dark. And you've got the fact with Tenerife that it has numerous microclimates, so that you're going from, desert to high altitude desert to rainforest, and just all these mixes. And for every valley you're in, it's going to have some unique weather. So having the appropriate clothes is difficult. And then you have some exceedingly long climbs where there's no fluid available. It's not like the Alps where there's a natural spring you can fill your bidon from, every couple of kilometers, So it's something that needs to be supported, I think, to be able to do it safely. I mean, you could do it with some panniers on your bike, I think
the maximize, also have to climb,
maximize you carry your chance of success, have it as a supported event. So I reached out to Tenerife Bike Training, who run cycle tours in the Canary Islands and Europe, and I've done some tours with them in both places, and I've sort of asked them to look into, is it something they'd be willing to support to possibly do in December, and sort of have a organized event. It's not going to be a mass event, because I don't think you can support a lot of people over a long distance, because people are going to be riding at very different speeds, but for a group of riders to do. So, there's a 400 kilometer route that's got about 10,500 meters of climbing, depending whether you map it in Strava or ride with GPS. And I'm sort of hopefully going to do another Rome out in Tenerife. And that's, I think will be the last ultra endurance ride I do, because I'm going to get a dog at the end of the year, I think, and I don't think training and riding ultra endurance is necessarily compatible with having a dog. So,
not with a puppy, but with the dog. But not with a puppy. Yeah. So get it out of the way, and then you'll have.
Yeah, exactly. I'm 57 next birthday, and just the training you have to do for an event, because it's not. Even with, the conversations you see around Everesting on the Facebook page, which is, how much training should you do? I've used Trainer Road as a sort of structured training program, I guess, since beginning of 2017. And I do their low volume program, which is 3.5 to 4.5 hours a week on the stationary there. And then I'll do a free ride on the Sunday, which can be 3 hours or 6 hours. So I don't do vast quantities of training on the bike, and I still find that's adequate. But I do 2 hours of strength training with a personal trainer a week. I do 2 core workout training sessions a week, which are 30 minutes or less. And after every bike ride, I spend about 20 minutes stretching out with yin yoga. Because if I don't stretch, I will start to get knee pain within about a month. Things just tighten up. So when you put all of that stuff together, it impacts yourself, it impacts your friends and your family, when you keep doing this year after year after year. You need to find a time when you want to reassess whether you want to keep doing it to that degree. And I think I'll sort of get to the point where I think I've done enough. I've done multi-day rides. I've done a multi-day race, even though I didn't race the Oak Route. I treated it as a slightly faster multi-day stage, non-competitive event. I've gotten very much into the Everesting side of things. And sort of Tenerife is probably where I genuinely fell in love with cycling uphill. And I think it's kind of where I'd like to go out with my last sort of stupidly long ride. If I go on holiday to Tenerife in the future, the bike will go with me and I will cycle up from sea level to the top of Tahiti. That's always going to happen. But I won't feel the need to do it multiple times in a day.
There is the satisfaction in knowing that something's been, like a box has been checked. I think that people who are attracted to this are inherently box checkers.
Well, I mean, it's nice to ride somewhere where you have an emotional attachment to the ride. Tenerife is actually where I did my geological final year thesis for geology. So I was actually out on Tenerife with my best cycle mate, because we were actually at college together doing geology with our geological hammers for 6 weeks, you know, and you didn't really see cyclists back in the mid 80s, you know, up on the mountain. But I think it's a fantastic place to cycle. I've sort of fallen in love with the island from that point of view. So it's kind of like where I'd like to do my last big one before I sort of try to be slightly more sensible, but still do rides that most people think aren't sensible.
Well, what's really cool about the way that the challenge has evolved now is, like, you could say, okay, I'm going to take 2 years and I'm not going to do that kind of training and I'm not going to do those types of challenges, but you could do quarter Everestings and you could see how many hills nearby you that you could get quarter Everestings on. Like, it's endless. It's truly boundless.
There's nothing near me. I'm over on the sort of southeast side of the UK, and it's quite flat. So half my training's done on a single speed bike, where I just find a nice headwind to cycle into.
Smart.
And the other half of there's a river valley, but between the bottom of the river valley to the top of the river valley is at most a 40 meter elevation gain. So, and never particularly steep. So you're talking about for even a quarter Everesting, you're probably going to have to do 80 repeats. And it's just does it that genuinely does not appeal. Yeah, genuinely doesn't.
Especially when they become really long rides, right?
Yeah. I get the concept of, especially I think when you're trying to build up towards an Everesting, how a quarter Everesting makes sense, and then you can go to base camp and then you can go up to the full one. I've looked back and, you know, I think any kind of ride you do in, you know, the Alps, the Pyrenees, even if you're up in Scotland or Wales, to rack up that many meters is reasonably simple, but not necessarily on the same hill. There's no quarter Rome, let's put it that way, which is, you know, 100 kilometers and 250 or 2,500 meters. Yeah.
Yeah, I've given Andy a couple of suggestions that we should have at least a half Rome.
I've done a bucket load of those rides in my lifetime. You know, I'll have, you know, the Hall of Fame would get out of control very quickly. I think we started to introduce that. And the quarter Everesting of proper repeats is going to be still quite unique for most people, I think.
I think so too.
Unless you're on Swift or something, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Interesting. So you have checked off an awful lot of badges, really. I mean, you've done virtual as well, right?
I did virtual last December. Didn't enjoy it.
I've thought about it a bunch of times.
A miserable existence. I was most of the way into a base camp virtual using a different piece of riding software. I think it was on RGT, and that crashed on me right on my, before I was about to start my final ascent up Stelvio, I think it was. So, yeah, and that kind of, and you see on the Everesting group on Facebook that there's, you know, always questions of, you know, my Zwift or whatever it is has all gone horribly wrong. Can I stitch things together and, you know, reclaim it? So I don't trust those softwares. And when you're trying to invest, well, I think it, for me, it was a 13-hour ride on Zwift. You know, if it goes wrong at the end, then you're just in tears, right? So it's nothing I had confidence in that everything was going to be working properly towards the end. I've done that. Two base camps. I've done a short. So actually, yeah, so the first Everesting we did was a short. So Firle Beacon was 10.2% average. And we did
that. So got you under 200 kilometers then.
Yeah, so I got us under 200K. And again, because that it was just the concept of doing a 5%, you know, 400 kilometer ride was just, you know, is you can take as long as you want. You can't take as long as you want because you can't stay up forever. Yeah, because it gets dangerous, especially on the descents, right?
Absolutely.
We've all got people we care about, and they're concerned when we go and do these stupid rides, and descending when you're absolutely brain dead, and I can tell, and people can tell when my legs start to take up all the carbohydrates and my brain starts to get none because my IQ very apparently drops, and I start to say stupid things and do dumb things like, so it's good to do rides that you feel are safe as well as the challenge itself, which is why we went for a short option, because we knew that we were going to be, the amount of time would be in the dark, because I think when we started Fell Beacon, we started about 3:45 in the morning and the sun was just starting to come up. It's a hill which ends in a dead end, so there was no traffic to worry about at that time of day. We got quite deep into it before people started to show up to drive to the top of the hill, because it's fantastic hiking up there. But then we finished right when the sun was setting as well. So, that part of it made it significantly safer. And, I think when the sun's up, you feel better than when you do in the dark. You've discussed
discussed
this with numerous people of how do you cope with going through the night, when I did the 10K Everesting on Hernan Pass, I had 3 or 4 hours in the dark. It was drizzling. There were sheep on the road. You are mentally and physically exhausted. So if you can take that risk out, then I think you're better off. And I think people can underestimate the descending part of the Everesting, because everyone gets so obsessed about you've got to go uphill. But you have to go downhill, and you want to go downhill efficiently, but you need to go downhill safely as well. And you're not going to be, for the most part, on closed roads. So there'll be cars coming up.
Right.
Most of these roads aren't particularly wide. You have to be cautious going down. And then at the end of the day, it becomes significantly more of a challenge. And I think when we planned the 10K ride on Hernan Pass, we were as conscious of the descent as we were of the suitability of the ascent as well.
Yeah, I think that's a huge piece of it. As you said, we've all got somebody to get home to safely. And the challenge really toggles back and forth from physical challenge on the climb to safety challenge on the descent. And it keeps going back and forth until you're finished.
Yeah, and it's one of the things with the Tady Rome that I kind of looked at, that of the four ways, of the four descents that are done on the mountain, three of them are actually really very non-technical. And which means you can take them blisteringly fast if you want to. I mean, some of them you can pedal pretty much the entire way down, which you obviously don't want to do unless you're going for the fastest known time for a Everesting Rome, which I know is a topic for discussion, but I'm not throwing my hat into the ring for that. But three of the descents are non-technical, but one of the descents is technical, but it's going to be the first big descent on the second day it would be done in daylight. So people can just take their time getting down it, and then pretty much you turn around and you'll go back up it,
And so when is this ride happening? You've got a date set for this ride?
No, sort of waiting to, I know when it won't be, because I have tickets for the Madonna concert in London at the beginning of December, so it's not going to clash with that, and I need to be back before Christmas, because I'll probably be hosting Christmas, so there'll be some organization there. So hoping to do it in the first half of December, but it comes down to when it fits in with the if Tenerife Bike Training have got the space in their calendar, because it's starting to be peak season for them, for people to go out to Tenerife to train. because the climate that time of year is pretty awesome. And hotel availability, I guess, because there's really two hotels or two places you can start and stop it from. And one of them is the Parador Hotel, which is right in the crater caldera at the top. But you can never get a room there because it's always booked out by the pro team. So that's where Ineos and Jumbo Visma and everyone stays. So that's basically the pros hotel. So you can never get a hotel room there. So you can't use that hotel, but it would be the perfect start and stop point. So there's a town down on one side of the mountain, which gives you access that is also pretty ideal. So it's on the route and it covers both day one and day two. So we're looking into that as well. So it comes down to planning it. And you know, if we find a slot that's suitable, then we'll probably put an announcement up on the Everesting Facebook page. Because I know there are plenty of people out there who would be up for a challenge like this. But like I say, it wouldn't be a vast number of people who do it, because I think these events, I know people who could probably ride this whole thing in 15 hours and do it in a day, whereas for me and the Everesting I just did, it was I rode 14 hours, front loaded day one a bit, so I really only had 100 mile ride left ish only 100 mile ride, just ignore the elevation part, for day two, and managed to get 4 or 5 hours sleeping, which is really what you want. It would technically be possible to do it in a one-er, I think, but you'd be doing so much of it in the dark that I don't think it would be safe. So I think there needs to be a cutoff there to take that into account as well.
I think that's wise, and it makes it more of an adventure rather
The risk you do when you go in a group is if someone does have a crash, that immediately takes some support off the road for every other rider as well, right? So you have to understand that your responsibility if you're riding in a group affects everyone else's ability to complete the event as well. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for doing this and telling us all about it. And I hope that we can catch up in the winter and hear all about it and do everything that you can to capture as much media as possible, because that's going to be a
I'll let you know and the community know how planning for the event progresses. I appreciate that. If something's in December, then people probably need to start thinking about a training plan for that event. You can't suddenly decide you're going to go do it in November. Some people can, but I'm not one of
those
people.
Some people can. Neither am I. Most of us need to prepare.
I hope it goes ahead, and I think it will be a spectacular ride. I sent you some pictures, but Tenerife, when you get up on the mountain, once you get above about 600 meters and you're pretty much through all the towns and you're just on the roads that go up, it's so good. And usually the sun is shining, but not always. Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Thank you again for doing this. It's wonderful to meet you. Yeah. And I hope that we can chat again soon.
Yeah. And thanks for all the work you do for the community. It's great to hear about everything, even people who want to do roams in under 24 hours, which I just cannot get my head around at all. that's a lot. It's a lot of Snicker bars and things to keep you going. Yeah.
It's incredible. Incredible what people can do.
I admire it as competitive as I get. I appreciate it's something I don't even need to think about trying to compete with. Yeah.
The job of hosting this podcast is incredibly humbling.
Yeah.
Incredibly. I cannot believe what some people have accomplished, and it's happening all the time, and this continues to evolve.
Yeah. I mean, the Facebook group is very inspirational, seeing what people do and for a lot of it, why they do it as well. Right. Cause for a lot of people, Jack Thompson's probably the ultimate example. I think Chris Hall was as well for the charities and they're actually doing it on behalf of, and that is also, I think, very, very worthwhile.
Very inspirational. Thank you again, David. I hope we can chat again soon.
Okay,
appreciate it. Be well.
Just ride safe.
Once again, thank you everybody for listening. If you are able to give the show a positive rating or review, or of course, simply by word of mouth. So if we're creating some content on the podcast that you think that somebody would enjoy in your life, please let them know about it. And then reach out anytime. We'd love to hear from you. It's podcast@everesting.com. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon.